is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation, Bear Viewing Edition. The Alaska Wildlife Alliance is holding a series of Wildlife Wednesday talks, inviting experts to share their experience on a variety of subjects. This week, we're going to hear from Jeff Fair, Alaska field biologist and author of the book In Wild Trust, about the McNeil River State Game Sanctuary. It's the story of the development of the sanctuary and of Larry A. Miller, who spent 30 years at McNeil as its first manager, sharing his insights into bear and human behavior that created the guidelines for bear viewing at McNeil. We're going to hear from Jeff, then a question and answer session moderated by AWA Executive Director Nicole Schmidt. The next Wildlife Wednesday presentation will be February 17th on Cook Inlet razor clams, an update on the stock since clamming closures in 2015. But for now, we're talking bears. Take it away, Jeff.
By a strange fluke of luck, my first job was trapping and radio collaring grizzly bears in Yellowstone National Park in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. So that spoiled me for life. That was 1976, and it was the exact same year that Larry A. Miller started with McNeil as manager of McNeil. The funny part is Larry stuck with bears and McNeil for the rest of his life, professional life at least. And after one year, I went back with loons for the rest of my professional life, but I've never gotten bears out of my system. And even when I was up north at above 70 degrees north latitude, looking for yellow-billed loons, I instead one day found a grizzly bear den that I tried on for size. And another time in the Arctic on the north slope of the Western Brooks, still in the foothills, I was following the Western Arctic caribou herd for a story I was writing for Audubon. And it was July, but there was a blizzard that came over us and high winds, and it was actually blowing my tent down. It was collapsing it on me at night. So I picked up and reconstructed things inside the fuselage of a wrecked airplane to get out of the wind. Little did I know that until next morning that I was sharing that airplane with a grizzly bear. So I think I'm the only wildlife biologist in the world, maybe the only person in the world, who's ever spent the night with a grizzly bear in a C-46. I've made three trips to McNeil with Larry. And I've known Larry and his wife forever, and I've known their daughter, their darling daughter, Kiana, to whom this book is dedicated. Well, McNeil's River State Game Sanctuary is right there off of McNeil Cove of Kamishak Bay. It was founded in, well, actually blessed by the state legislature in 1967, the game refuge north of it came later, and McNeil is now at 200 square miles. And I want to read just a little bit, and I'm sorry, this sounds so boring, but a little bit of the legislation that established the sanctuary, because this is the goals that Larry had to follow. And as shy as he is about taking credit, he says, "I just followed the rules." But actually, he made up a lot of the rules to reach these goals. So what were the legislature's intentions? Here's the actual language. A, the McNeil River State Game Sanctuary is established to 1, provide permanent protection for brown bear and other wildlife populations and their habitats so that these resources may be preserved for scientific, aesthetic, and educational purposes. 2, manage human use and activities in a way that is compatible with number one of this subsection, and to maintain and enhance the unique bear viewing opportunities within the sanctuary. Those were Larry's basic guiding rules. Well, why is McNeil so, let me just go back there. Whoops. All this coast along this area here, most of it is cliffs. And salmon can't swim up a waterfall to get to a stream to spawn in. But as I showed you before, McNeil is right down in an unusual geological flatland. This is actually the mouth of McNeil River coming into the estuary. And there's a long spit here. And then you get out into McNeil Cove off of Kamishak Bay, so that basically the fish can actually migrate up into McNeil River. And they do. There was another geological burp there that raised some hard rock about 2 miles upstream, so that there are a falls there, or at least a heavy rapids. And the salmon, in this case on McNeil, it's chums, and they're likely to pull up at the base of those falls and sort of get ready to make their leaps. And it's this pool of salmon that brings in the bears. And it's the bears that brought in Larry Allmiller. One of the key things, how Larry got this job, which he calls the best summer job in the world, how he got it is an interesting story, but I'm not going to go into it here. I want to give you a little look at, or actually a soundbite from the book itself, in the way I introduced Larry there. And this happened on his 30th year, his last year as manager, with all the savvy packed into him. And we had been out viewing bears, and he was leading a group of 10. And we got on our way back, we got right down to the estuary, which we had to cross to get back to camp. And it was an incoming tide, but we figured we were early enough to make it with hip boots. And when we got down to almost the shore, we saw two bears on our left, and they were yearlings, and they were two cubs playing. And we looked around, and then to our right, about 100 yards off, was their mom. This is how Larry handled that situation. Careful and conservative as he is in such situations, he has suggested we pause here. One of his guiding tenets across three decades in this job is to not intrude enough to change a bear's behavior. And he'd rather not disturb this young family. Allmiller carries a 12-gauge shotgun loaded with slugs, a state requirement, but in 30 years, he's never had to shoot a charging bear, and he prefers not to spoil that record. The weapon remains lashed to the side of his pack. So we wait. We make a modicum of noise to subtly reiterate our presence. We watch. One of the cubs rolls over onto its back, unconcerned. Opposite him, the female peers at us, then reinvests her attention in the salmon she is dissecting. She turns her back to us. Minutes pass. Allmiller scrutinized the situation. He's watched this bear, called the Spit Bear, tend her yearling cubs all summer, and knows that she's a little less protectively aggressive and more likely to allow them to wander farther away. Finally, he suggests that we move slowly as a tight group down to the beach, then turn hard right and proceed along the base of a bluff, which will take us fairly close past her, but never put us between her and her cubs. An eagle alights on the beach out beyond the mother bear, who moves off to investigate, giving us a little more room. We commit ourselves and make all of 10 yards progress before the female moves all the way back, past her fish, to the base of the bluff. We halt. She sits down, back to us again. Meanwhile, the cubs have moved further off in the opposite direction. Altmiller takes it all in. "Anyone bring camping gear?" he says. The answer is no, and he knows it. His touch of humor helps calm the tension. Any volunteers to test that old maxim about Mother Bear and her cubs? He inquires. None step forward. Well, let's see, who can we afford to lose? We have two accountants in the group, don't we? Nervous laughter. Someone brings up the old joke about the slowest runner. Mom rolls us an attentive glance. More long minutes transpire. The tide seeps onto the flats, slowly but perceptibly rising. All Miller eyes the bear closely, the tide, each one of us. Okay, he says, how about we try breaking the rule this one time? He isn't kidding. He has a strong measure of this bear's unusual tolerance and has assimilated the cues from her behavior this evening. And he points out, we'll still have room to react to her behavior, to retreat if prudent. It's all Miller's judgment that must prevail, and he offers the group little time for worry. Stay close together. Look slow, but walk as fast as you can, looking slow. And off we go, bisecting the bear family and the cardinal rule with 10 human spirits and the all Miller acumen for this specific and unusual case. What happens after that is in the book. You can buy it if you want to find out, but I can tell you that the one piece of evidence that you know already is that I'm here talking to you. Well, a question for a lot of people that want to get to McNeil, say, how do you get there? And the actual truth is you need an airplane, basically, but before that, you need a permit. And you can get the permit from the lottery, and you can learn about that at the Department of Fish and Game's website, and or just even say McNeil permits, probably, and you could Google that and get the whole story. But anyway, it's 10 people at a time, and they all have to have permits. And to get those, you apply for a permit through the lottery. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But once you have your permit, then you line up a flight, usually from Anchorage or Homer, across to McNeil, and get your stuff unloaded. Those little arrows keep going away from me. As you as you fly in, this is your first look at camp, McNeil Camp. On the left, a couple of staff buildings, a pair of outhouses, a food cache, the cook cabin, and the sauna. So it's every pleasure of home except you're sleeping outside and eating your own food. That first night, you pick a spot in the unfenced meadow in front of the cook cabin. And some of these spots are actually the exact sites of Aleutic sod houses, because they spent seasons here as well several hundred years ago. Very historic. Then you go in and have supper in the cook cabin. Now, this past summer and this future summer, they're planning on, and the past summer, they divided the group up and only 5 people at a time in the cabin to be socially distanced. And they're going to do that again this summer. But basically, all the food stuff, all the toothpaste, anything else that might smell good to a bear goes into the cook cabin. And then you'll be going in 5 at a time and sharing a meal. And you get to know each other. And it's one of the great communal lessons of a community in the wilderness, getting to know 9 other people with totally different backgrounds from you. And by the end of 3 days, you're like one big family. That's what happens in the wilderness. Next morning, you'll convene out in front of the cook cabin, and the guides will, of course, you'll probably be standing further apart than this. The guides will give you the royal ration of rules. Now, these aren't all Larry's rules. He inherited a few of them. The one which he just broke about a sow and cubs the 10 people rule, which was set up by Jim Farrow, the man who, the regional biologist who hired Larry for this job. And 10 people has worked great for the whole time. Of course, no human food to the bears. But on top of that, you want no surprises for the bears. And this comes from, evolved through 30 years in Larry's savvy. But basically, you don't want to stress the bears, and surprise stresses the bears. So you go out, you have the same number of people each day, you go at the same times to the same places, you make no fast movements, no loud voices, and you stay together as a group. Those are key, and together with a few other things, across these years, they have created in the bears a neutral habituation to humans. Neutral meaning they don't look at you as a food source because they never get human food. And they don't look at you as a threat because you never surprise them or approach them or threaten them in any way. Neutral habituation, one of Larry's favorite phrases. So you start out across the estuary, could be muddy that day at a real low tide, or you could be waiting and happy to have those boots on. Now, once you get up on the other side, you get onto a trail, and it's the whole trip is like 2 miles up to the falls. And there's a lot of things you can see along the way, including the fact that you might be watched. And for some folks, it's a little nerve-wracking at first, but the truth is when a bear stands up like this, it's not a threat. He's trying to get his eyes above the bushes and his nose up in the air to verify what you are. You might see a sow with a single cub. You might see a sow with twins. You might see a sow with three little cubbies. Those are cubs of the year right there. And you can see the bluffs and the cliff areas that I was describing earlier. And here's just three bigger cubs, older bears. And I just wanted to share one piece of bear magic biology that I learned when I wrote my first book about bears. They typically breed in July or June and July. And after that, a little zygote forms, several of them probably, in each mother bear's uterus. And they divide, they cell divide up to the blastula phase, which looks, at least through a dissecting scope, like something like a blackberry. Little cells all in a sphere. Those blastulae actually float around in her uterus until just before she dens. And depending on how much fat she has, if she's got a lot, she may have three of those that actually implant on the uterine wall and become fetuses. If she doesn't have as much fat, fewer blastulae implant. And if she's a starving bear, none of them will implant. That's a little bit of bear magic that we call being almost pregnant. Here's a couple of youngsters, just pretty starchy, but they're just playing. They're just learning how to approach another bear and do some mock fighting and everything. And when you get something like that, Larry always used to get down on his knees so the other photographers could shoot over his head and get them. He'd even give them advice on camera settings and all that. He claims he's not a great photographer, but he actually is. And he has taken the greats around and helped out a lot of novices at the same time get really good shots. That was Larry. Still happening now. Some of these times you don't even need Larry to intervene. You can just let the bear move in. And well, I'll explain this in a little bit. Most of the time when you're out around McNeil, the bears will walk right past you. They may look at you, as they approach, or some of them don't even bother with you. You have become, because they are neutrally habituated to humans, you're just the same thing as an alder bush. And they're busy looking elsewhere to see if there's another bigger bear that could come down and give them trouble. Larry says, one of his famous call phrases was that, if the bear isn't stressed, then I'm not stressed. And so this whole thing about no surprises on the bears goes back to the idea of the least force, the least amount of surprise. So even when you needed to move bears out of camp, Larry was first taught to use birdshot in a shotgun or cracker shells or whatever, even loud noises. And that, of course, drove the bears out, but it stressed them. And he doesn't want to stress bears. He learned that he could make as little as just a vocal thing, not loudly, to a bear and turn it out of camp. He had one of their favorite longtime bears that when he was in camp alone, he was sitting reading and he had his door open. It was a beautiful sunny day. And all of a sudden he sensed somebody was there. He turned around and it was one of his favorite bears. It was Teddy. And she had her head inside the door. And Larry looked at her and said, "No bears allowed." She backed out and left. I mean, it's just, oh, and the other thing he used to do for bears that he didn't know that well was put a bunch of pebbles into a tin can, and he could rattle that tin can, and it's an unusual sound, and it would get the bear's attention, and they would see the human and just walk away, not scaring them, not hurting them in any way. But it's the least, least force stimulus to move them when you had to. And on top of all this, Larry came across the idea for human safety, let the bears decide. Why not let the bears decide? Then they won't be stressed. And if they, you know, because you don't approach them, you let them approach you. And if some of them want to get closer, as we saw before, that's perfect. And what we end up with is this idea that some of these bears are trusting you. And it's not like they like you or anything else. It's an ecological trust, just like the bears trust that there'll be salmon at McNeil. The salmon trust that there'll be tides that can float them in there. It's all the same sort of ecological trust, but this is a behavioral one. And the two species actually have sort of agreed to it. So you can get close. Sometimes they want to get too close, but there's only two places where it's not their territory. And one is the camp, and the other one is where you're headed this day to the falls. And these are the pools in front of these people where the salmon just concentrate, and then they make their runs up over the falls. Now, there's 10 people per, plus a guide or two, and there's only four people showing here. The pad is a gravel pad, like a long, about the size of a long, narrow bedroom. And what is sort of interesting is that below it, directly below it, is a little cave, and half the crew often goes down there. And on rainy days, it's a favored position. It puts you in a much more intimate position with the bears, but it is drier. The other place you might go if you go in June, now July is the dog salmon run on McNeil. The other place you might go in June is McFick Creek, which is a much smaller creek that goes into, flows north into the southern part of the estuary. And so there's some bears there. And here's one, just, it's interesting because they will come. They are curious animals. But once they recognize you as a human, they're going to probably avoid you. And if not, all you have to do is stand up or wave your hat. And they recognize that as just some body language, and they just turn around and walk away. But they're not stressed. Here's a better day at McFick when that red run is really high. You can have some great observations there as well. And in fact, there are substitutes that are allowed to be out there in case somebody decides not to go up to the falls or out to Mikvik one day, and they want to stay in camp and get rest. They have some subs, but the subs that aren't going along have to stay in camp. And from in camp, you can see a lot of bears, even if you're just a sub. And the guides usually try to get you up to the falls at least one day. It usually works out. Anyway, here's Kiana looking out a window that Larry has seen 30 bears at one time out of. So they do come down by camp, and that one out there in the field is not trespassing. That's outside the camp line. But my favorite story about looking out this window is Kiana, when she was really little, one of her first trips up there, she looked out the window and she said, "Daddy, there's a big dog out there." And Larry walked over and put his arm around her and looked down, and here was a big bear. And he said, "Oh, Kiana, that's not a dog, that's a bear." That would be Larry. Well, most of the time what you'll see at the falls, and I know it's at the falls in this picture because that's a chum salmon, is bears catching fish. But there can be some excitement at times. Well, there's always a little bit of excitement, because at times when there aren't as many fish and they're harder to catch, the bears will, the non-fed bears will wait for somebody else to catch it and then challenge to get the fish away. And sometimes these turn into pretty nasty fights. So some of the bears have learned to run up and run behind the pad and all the human shrubbery on it, and basically just sneak in and get behind it. And hopefully the other bear has shied away by then, and they can eat their salmon for really great close-ups if you like blood and squirting eggs and everything. And I want to tell one story about this. Samantha was our guide one day in, I think it was my first trip in 2000. And we had two bears coming up, one with a fish and the other one chasing it. And they were both running straight for the pad, fast. And they kept aiming at the pad. They were only focusing on the fish. They weren't looking at where they were going, I guess. And I saw Samantha reach down beside her folding chair, and I thought, she's picking up her shotgun. This could be something. And instead, she came up with two golf ball-sized pebbles. And I thought, Samantha, you better have a pretty damn good arm. But she wasn't throwing them. As the bears got closer, she clacked them together with her hands, just clacked them together. And that clacking sound carried down to the bears, got their attention, and they veered off. And I don't even remember which bear got the fish in the end, but I just remember Samantha clacking those stones together. Least full stimulus, no stress. And there's no stress among the staff, especially when there's two of them out there. Sometimes they take a snooze, and the other staff love to get the photo of them, not knowing there's a, you know, 600 to 800 pound bear nearby.